Hello all, welcome into the X-Wing segment of the Wide World of Wargaming. As always, I am your host, Vincent Morgado. Joining me, Drew Bishop and Mr. Jeff Wilder. Fellas, how are we tonight?
Go ahead, Drew.
I was going to say, he gave me first dibs this time. I'm doing great. I'm excited to be here.
Doing well, Vince. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm a little jealous that you two got to go to the hyperspace trial and I didn't. How did that go? Recriminations? Salt? Any other emotions bleeding over from the weekend?
Go ahead, Drew.
Go ahead. I was going to say, go ahead, Jeff. I had a particularly nasty match where I just couldn't roll anything. And we went through the entire game, and I did, I think, maybe two shields. And I lost both of my A-wings, two of the three A-wings, and half on Poe. And that was the game that sealed it for me. But I think the biggest downer was it was tooted as like a 6-round event. And at the beginning of round 4, there actually weren't enough players to do that full 6 rounds and then make a cut to top 16. And it turned into top 8. And so that was the only thing that I kind of walked away from. And I was like, I kind of knew, right, with the number of players that we had going in, that it wasn't enough, but I was hoping we'd be able to skewer it, maybe try it out. But
well, just to be clear, it was always going to be top 8. It was, but the drop from 6 to 5 rounds was, like Drew said, very late. It was announced right before the 5th round started.
Yep.
I think you guys are perfectly reasonable in being upset. I never heard about that. That's kind of scummy to cut an event a round short, literally before the last round.
Right. Well, so that was the thing too, with my MOV wasn't particularly decent, but if I had a good enough win in my last round, I might've been able to push myself into the top 16 to get dice or templates.
Yeah.
I can't remember which one you get, whether it being top 8 or top 16, but yeah, I was really looking forward to that because I knew that I wasn't, if I didn't get that last round, I wasn't going to get to do it. And then right before we started, they made the announcement, as Jeff said, and I was kind of like, oh, well, I guess I'm playing, for fun with this list that I'm going to be changing after this round, right? Like, one last time.
So, can you give me, 3 minutes on this? Because it's kind of an interesting tournament for me.
I'm going to grab a bottle of whiskey right next to me, and I'm going to sit back and listen to Jeff elucidate.
All right.
Go ahead.
So, first of all, yes, it was it wasn't scummy because there was certainly no illicit intent or anything like that. It wasn't even we want to get out early. It was just we want to conform with what the numbers that that FFG has for tournaments.
Yes.
And it was just kind of a shame that it was so late that they realized the reason that they thought it was going to be 6 rounds is they thought that the old rule for a buy being used was still worth 1.5 players, which pushed the number of players to 40.5, which would have been 6 rounds. 6 rounds cut to 8. But that rule apparently no longer exists, and they discovered that, and so that's why they changed it. I was in a weird position because, as I mentioned when they told us, I was playing on the height tables, which was really nice of them to provide. If I lost my final game, I was going to be kind of upset about there not being a 6 game, or I was going to be fine with there not being a 6 game. If I won my final game, I was going to be upset with there not being a 6 game, sort of for the reason that Drew mentioned, a final game would have given me a chance to really up my standings. But I had an interesting tournament because of the 5 games that I played, in my opinion, only 2 of them, a win and a loss, were truly decided by skillful play within the game. The other 3 games, a win and 2 losses, were decided by variance. And the reason that I wanted to talk about this is because there are 3 things, 3 different things that happened that I think touch on my rant about variance a while back. So in my win, I got my opening shot unanswered with Han Solo from across the board, did 3 damage to Wedge, who had 4 green dice and a focus token. That allowed me to kill Wedge early. That player, who's a great guy named David, he set an incredible trap for me for Han Solo, which worked. But because I had done so much damage to Wedge, I was able to kill Wedge, ride out his trap for me that eventually destroyed Han Solo and kill the rest of his list. So I won a game that I probably would not have won without 4 blanks rolled on that opening shot. All right, this is what I was talking about when I was talking about windows of variance. The rest of the game was fine, variance-wise. We had ups and downs. We had normal swings in variance. But that one window of variance shaped the game in a way that was disproportionate to the rest of the game. When I played Mr. Dan Fowler, who's one of the nicest guys in the entire world, I rolled 14 using Han Solo and his buddy Lando. I rolled 14 green blanks in a row.
This is
documented. So I'm giving Dan Fowler's name because it is documented. This is not hyperbole. This is journalism, as my friend Jordan used to say. 14 green blanks in a row. So that is, and that was in 7 pairs of 2. So 2 green blanks, Honnet, 2 green blanks. Next round, 2 green blanks, Honnet, 2 green blanks. Next round, 2 dice as a normal defense, green blanks. 2 dice as a normal defense, green blanks, etc. 14 green blanks in a row. That was a game that I barely lost to the eventual finalist, Dan Fowler. I was down 1 point and had to re-engage and ended up losing by 45. But I effectively didn't have I was fighting uphill the whole game because I rolled 14 green blanks.
I call that up.
Yeah. Finally, in my final game against a new player named Phil, he was running Obi-Wan and a Jedi Starfighter 7B, who rolled, in the course of this game, rolled 15 natural evades with Obi-Wan and 6 force modified focuses. So he had an Obi-Wan Delta 7B with effectively 27 health.
Wow.
Yeah, so I lost that game on the final round because he had told me that one of his torrents only had 2 hit only had taken 2 damage. It actually had taken 4. If I'd killed that torrent, which was very easy to do, it would have been a 5 die shot with Han with focus at 3 defense die torrent with 1 hit point. If I'd taken that shot, I would have won the game and I would have placed 16th by MOV. But I took the shot at Obi-Wan, rolled 3 hits. He rolled a blank or a focus and or 2 focuses and an evade. Took another shot, rolled 2 hits. He rolled 2 evades.
And you took that shot because you were falsely informed about the torrent?
Not on purpose, but I don't think it was on purpose.
Completely accidentally.
Yes, he told me that ship had 3 hit points left. Now, the thing about it is that if I'd really thought about this is the third thing, because this illustrates there are decisions you make that matter more than the variance. Okay. I didn't kill a ship in that game because I did 30 points of damage to Obi-Wan and he just absorbed them and finished with 1 hit point. All right. Regardless, even if he had deliberately told me that ship had 2 hull left, if I had shot at it, I would have collected half points, once we added it all up, I would have realized it was dead, of course, and would have won. So I made a bad decision that cost me the game, but obviously the game was shaped by variance before that. But I still could have won that game. And that's what, when people are talking about their decisions that you can make, so don't blame your dice, that's kind of what they're talking about. Now, on the other hand, I sort of feel like, you know, you roll 15 natural evades and 6 force evades with Obi-Wan Kenobi, you're probably gonna win. But still, if I had made the shot that I should have made instead of taking the shot on Obi-Wan, even though it ended up being a good shot, and like a, I think it was a 1 in 30 chance that he rolls 5 dice without getting a blank, then, you know, I win anyway, and I win bigger, but I should have taken the shot on the torrent, and that's on me. So I ended up finishing 21st. I'm convinced that my version of Han without Kanan, who isn't hyperspace legal, obviously, is not capable of getting the job done. It just doesn't have enough offense. Yeah.
You know, Jeff, it's interesting that you would say that after everything you just said, where it sounds like you just got robbed by, I don't want to say magma hot rolling, but I mean, some kind of something.
You mean liquid hot magma rolling?
I mean, legitimately, you want to talk about odds. I don't even want to know what the odds are of that many, of just rolling that much paint.
Well, I mean, it was absurd, but that's the thing. It was absurd, and yet, if in my final shots I had made the right decision, I still would have won. I mean, granted, maybe not. There was a 1 in 25 chance that I wouldn't have killed the torrent with 5 dice and a focus against his 3 dice unmodified. But I probably would have won, right? And that's despite, but so I can't, variance was a factor, but it wasn't the determining factor at the end of the game. My bad choice to shoot at Obi-Wan was the determining factor at the end of the game.
I mean, that's kind of not fair to say, though, because you have to look at it, the way to look at that for me would be, what was I forced to not do by this guy rolling temperature of the sun hot dice?
Yeah.
Efficiency did I lose? What opportunities for movement weren't there because this guy just wouldn't stop living?
Right. No, that's definitely true. I don't want to say that's not true. And it was true, and it was frustrating to me. But it's also frustrating to me that I didn't simply stop and say, look, show me the damage cards. Let's add up the points. We know this is the last turn. Let me have all this information to make this decision. That is after the fact more frustrating to me than the unbelievably great rolls.
That's fair. I mean, it is one of those, like, you're kind of mad at yourself for not being fully aware of the game state, I guess.
Yeah. Well, and to be fair to myself, I didn't think I had a chance to make the cut. I all of my games were close. Really, really close. I mean, like 112 to 104, 45 points on the last shot of the game instead of 1 point, which it was before the last shot of the game. Things like that. So I actually have pretty decent MOV. So if I thought about it, I would have thought, you know, I'm actually pretty far up there, but I didn't give it that thought. And that's on me. That's not on his hot rolling. That's not on, by the way, the odds of rolling 14 blanks, seven doublets of blanks is approximately 1 in 800,000.
I would have expected it to be a lot higher than that. You know,
yeah, I mean, that's a lot, but 800,000, granted, it's the, you know, over your entire X-Wing career, but I am one in 800,000. I'll probably never see that again. And that's me. I mean, for me, rolling 10 straight blanks is, you know, that's just an average Saturday.
Yeah, you put out a prayer to the dice gods before the tournament in one of our group chats.
And I know, I sure did. It didn't work.
Jeff, you mean, a friend of mine is really good at, he's experienced with animal sacrifices. You may need to experiment with purchasing a chicken. I mean,
I'll get a box of KFC. You know, Joe will
take care of me. You know, they sell goats around here. Like, there's a lot of free range animals. Like, a lot of them.
There's actually a rooster down the coast in Pacifica, some indeterminate distance, that starts crowing at about 5:45 a.m. every day.
I mean, it sounds like that's a twofer. I mean, you get them out of your you get them out from ruining your Sundays. And, you know, maybe that that new coat of paint on your dice might be the difference maker. Oh, I'm sorry, Jeff's not done.
Done. I was just gonna say. So that is how my rant on variance worked out in practice. I have one game that I won that I should have won. One game that I lost that I should have lost. The other three games went the opposite way that they should have gone due to variance.
It's part of the game
as a whole.
That's equity.
Sometimes they just, the gods are not with you.
The one thing that I thought was interesting most, Jeff, was you mentioned Obi-Wan. We saw quite a bit of Republic at this event, and there were multiple lists in the top 16, and there were at least two in the top 8 that were particularly strong. At least I thought they were strong, and wound up with me and my cohorts talking about Anakin in particular, and the strengths that he has, and of course his weaknesses as well. But I thought that was most interesting to me was how many of these lists did so well with the faction being out for, you know, such a little time.
Anakin's a...
Go ahead, Drew.
Well, I've said, and I think I will say probably that a full Jedi list is going to be tournament competitive. Like, I assure you, once the proper adjustments are made, because I think we all agree 7B is going to come down, whether they go away from initiative pricing, which I think probably was an overstep, or they do something to that upgrade, you know, there's not going to be a whole lot holding them back from being able to go toe-to-toe maybe with four Phantoms.
I think maneuverability-wise, they can already take the Phantoms. But I think the one thing, of course, because the Jedi only have one Force, right? I think you really need two Force to be decent, and I think three does kind of push you over the edge. But, you know, when you compare Anakin to, you know, Poe or Vader, you know, he's got the action economy of Poe, with, you know, defensive and offensive modifications, right? As far as Force goes. You know, that damage output is, you know, obviously not exactly similar to Vader's, but, you know, you've got the maneuverability of Poe with the slight offensive output of Vader. And I think that that's a really powerful combination. And
I don't know. No, go ahead, Drew. I'm sorry.
No, I was just thinking, you know, we sat down and we were kind of looking at it, and in the hands of someone who knows what they're doing, you know, and it really does come down to flying, right, at that point. But you're looking at it, or at least we were looking at it, and we were like, you know, if you have the bid against another Initiative 6, unless there's multiples of that initiative, right, you're going against, Anakin is more than likely going to come out on top, you know, bearing, you know, bad dice or dice variance.
I think he's probably one of the best repositioners. He might be the best.
I mean, as far as a ship goes that can, you know, hard one barrel roll boost and still have focuses for attacking and defending with no stress on him, I think that's above and beyond, you know, that's everything Poe wants to be, right? But Poe does it at the cost of a stress. With slightly less maneuverability.
As far as PS6s go, Anakin is king of maneuverability.
Yes, sorry, that's 100%. But no, that was what I went away from. I almost wanted to dive into it, but that brought up, you know, what do you fly with Anakin then? Maybe it is another two Jedi. You know, there were a lot of good lists that had single Jedi in it, or sorry, double Jedi as an Anakin and a friend, whether it be Ahsoka or Luminara, or even, you know, Mace, although I don't think there was a Mace Windu at the tournament. But it brought up the weakness of that list, and the fact is, you know, there isn't a whole lot of points once you have those two Jedi in the list, Anakin and a buddy. You don't really have that many points to play around with to get something decent that can help you, you know, stay afloat.
Yeah, Obi-Wan, this guy's Obi-Wan was 79 points.
Obi-Wan's not cheap. It's very hard to make a cheap Kenobi.
Both Anakin and Obi-Wan are very expensive.
I'm
even with the Delta.
Well, even without you mean,
right?
Like the problem I think that I see with the Jedi is that they almost have to be 7Bs, or they just don't do damage. I mean, you can't you can't rely on two damage economy to win you a lot of games anymore, unless you're Resistance A-Wings, where you don't have to worry about keeping, you know, a facing on target.
Getting the shot back, right? Shot back at.
And then even then, really, we're talking about Lulo when we talk about Resistance A-Wings.
This is
how much does calibrated laser targeting cost?
2 points, I think. It's either 2 or 4.
Depending on your initiative. I know it's up to, I believe it's up to 10 on Anakin.
So, I mean, you're not really saving that many points.
Noel was running Anakin with calibrated at the tournament and did very well with it as well. I don't know his final placing, but I know he was in the I don't remember if he was in the top 16.
He wasn't in the top 16. He was 17, 18, 19.
Oh.
17, 18, 19, or 20, maybe?
Yeah, somewhere around there. But I know that he was using it to great effect, and he's one of the only people that I know of who was using it to great effect, too. But that's always an option for them as well.
Yeah, but I mean, it, you know, kind of all that is to me is a drain on your force, because you're going to be wanting to use your actions to reposition into that bullseye arc generally.
If it's up to 10 points for Anakin, then 7B is the right choice, because basically the agility of 7B does, the agility loss doesn't hurt him. By the way, that is why people think that 7B is properly init costed. The agility just doesn't, the higher your init is, the less a bad agility hurts you.
This is true. And with the ability to have force as well, also really, you know, I mean, if they don't have tokens next to them, you know, they still have modifiers. Now, granted, of course, you know, you only get one back around, right? But, you know, these ships have the ability to just duck out.
But keep in mind that force is more valuable the more dice you're rolling.
Exactly.
So it actually gets less valuable with two dice than it is with three.
This is true. But just the fact that you...
But on the other hand, on offense, it's more valuable with three dice than it is with two.
Makes sense. But I'm just saying, like, the fact that you have it, right? And the fact that the Aether Sprites are so fast, you know, they can dip out of the battle really easily. I think... Nathan, oh my gosh, why am I forgetting his last name? I played him during the tournament. He made the cut, and did unfortunately lose in his top 8 match. But he was the gentleman that I played where my dice just, I mean, it was the most average, for me as far as, like, you know, hit focus blank on 3 dice. But I always had at least 2 shots coming back at me, and I was not willing to spend my focus on a ship with at least 2 force at range 3. So yeah, no, I was excited to see Republic make such a good showing at the tournament, and I was very surprised with how well people not only flew Anakin, but how Anakin overall performed.
I have to say that I think the large amount of Republic is why Empire did so well.
This is also true too. A lot of the lists that they don't like to see were beaten back by the TIE Swarms. And while, you know, maybe Jeff, you are unfamiliar with ace play around TIE fighters, Jeff and I know that, you know, someone who's good at ace play loves seeing the swarm across from them, at least if you, you know, if you have a proper thought process on like how to engage them and try to take them out.
Right.
I was not very pleased with, you know, the, shall we say, list diversity at that event. Mostly, you know, I'll always be biased. I like seeing Rebels because I just think the X-Wing might be the coolest thing ever invented by mankind. It's interesting that we talked, you know, last week about lack of, you know, list diversity among Rebels. And then as soon as, you know, Empire show up and with a good form at a hyperspace, it's literally two lists. It's the, you know, three versions or three sets of the exact same TIE Swarm, or it's Vader Steel Fell. I mean,
yeah,
there was some TIE Salad in there, as well.
But that wasn't that Rick, and he fell out.
Rick was not. I played Rick as well. Again, on Lost to Dice variants, which was really sad on my part. He did.
He made the top 16. He didn't make the cut.
He did make the cut. He had to drop. Because he teaches. He was doing rowing or something. He had to be on the water at 6:30 in the morning and was going to get back by noon plus, and he couldn't do it. But he was running Countdown, Duchess, who's the other one? Pierce Sabacc.
Vermeer.
No, he was running triple striker and Vader.
I've played that list and it's really? Very good.
Okay. Yeah. It's pretty decent. He fed me Duchess like literally on a silver platter. Like she got two or three range one shots on her and just got wiped. But I couldn't. Every time I attacked him, it was focus evade on the ships, and then I blanked, and my before I knew it, it was Poe and my initiative one versus two strikers with two hull and Vader with like one or two shields missing, and Vader just did Vader things like in the Rebels show, and it was very sad.
But yeah, also, Vader's cool. A tyrant. If you're with Vader and you're ahead, he's just an animal. You know, it's
well, if your dice variants, right? Again, my attacks, you know, focus, blank, evade. Oh, I'm getting shot at by a striker and Darth Vader. Do I really want to spend that focus to like get the second hit to try and kill a striker with two hull left with a focus token, right? Like, chances are they survive with one, which, spoiler alert, both of them did. and then I wind up dying. Poe just gets walks into the saloon and takes like, you know, 60 magnum shots to the chest. Like it was so bad. But no, it was great. Rick had a great showing. It was a really fun game. He is like my favorite person to play against. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's very TIE Salad is one of those things where it's like it's one of the better B lists, I think is probably the right way to say it.
Well, I think that is probably more properly classified as a Vader mini swarm, right?
I think it is too. Yeah, it's a Vader mini swarm list.
Well, there's some people who run it without Vader, and they run it with steel and a few more upgrades around. So I've just classified it as Salad.
You know, what's funny is in my game against Dan Fowler, I killed Merrick Steele. He hung Merrick Steele out to dry a little bit, and I killed him. And I had taken two shields on Han Solo, and that was it. And I ended up losing that game. That was quite the slap in the face.
Yeah.
Take out 55 points and then at the cost of two shields and then lose.
I wish I could have seen it, Jeff, but I was busy losing myself. I apologize.
Yeah, me, you, and Sherry all finished right there in the top of the third, the last third.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. I think I was. What is it? You were 21st, right?
21,
I think
yeah.
I was 18 and Sherry was 19, and both of us, I was proud of that. I was proud of her. We're always like, you know, we were this close to greatness.
Oh my, you're not going to stop or ever.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I love it too much. Oh, and then are we going to talk about the trailer? Maybe not. No.
Let's save that for last. Let's wrap up on the trailer. You took Han, Jeff, and you know, regardless of how much you beat down on yourself, I think you have no reason to be, you know, feel bad about your showing this weekend when two guys rolled, I mean, beyond any sense of sanity against you. But over the weekend,
well, one guy rolled beyond sanity against me. The other guy, I just rolled abysmally against him.
Okay, well, we'll leave it with that.
I mean, two sides of variance.
Jeff, there. You got to learn to see where your power goes, man. There was that gentleman in the EU sucked all your Han energy and performed a spirit bomb on the largest X-Wing tournament in the world.
With 144 point
Han. With 144 point 1.0 fat Han, baby.
Yeah. Everything.
I'm going to ask you guys questions about this because this is a relic from another time, according to Drew. And apparently, according to some very reputable sources, they don't believe this can be beaten in 75 minutes. That's a direct quote from Tyler Tippett, who we know of Adepticon fame.
Oh, we've known him a long way back. But yes, no, I think I'm going to find a thing from Duncan Howard who put it best. But Jeff, you were okay, so here I found it. All right, so Duncan says, all right, boys, let's try this again. What was your least favorite thing about X-Wing 1.0? Point fortressing, unkillable ships, dials not mattering, perfect information repositioning ships, turrets being able to shoot every turn with no consequences, minimal variance, and infinite regen? Oh, I'm sorry. That was Fat Han 2.0.
Yeah, the amazing thing is that some of the people in that thread didn't get what he was saying.
I missed it until Drew just explained it.
Yeah. Yeah, he was basically saying everything you hated about 1E is in that 144 point fat Han.
Yep. Oh dear.
So and it is hard to argue with. I see everything he's talking about. What I genuinely don't understand is by the time a lot of that kicks in, you've done 6 points of damage to Han.
Right.
What then makes him unkillable?
I truly feel that it is the unkillableness comes from the fact that he can wear you down, right? Whereas, you'll do one or two damage to him, he'll maybe do one or two damage back to you, but you're not gonna pull that shield back, you're not gonna pull that hull back. There was an Anakin, actually, again, Nathan's Anakin was running the repair bot and actually got him a few games because he was able to repair the shields on Anakin and keep his half health. But to do that, you take a no-shoot token, right? Now, I don't know fully what R2 does in 2.0, but I do know that he regens you. Do you not take any... I mean, you have the ability to randomly flip a hit... a face-down damage card over, right?
Han has a 14... Han, while he's within one of an obstacle, has a 14% chance of flipping up a hit to a face-up.
It's a proc...
Now, the thing about it is... You only need, by the time that kicks in, you only need one more hull damage on Han before you've got half points.
Yep. Right.
And that can't be regenerated. You get one more hull damage on Han, you have half points at that point. So, I mean, I'm not exactly doubting it because, I've seen what happens when people doubt Ghost Finn, and then they play it and they're like, holy crap. So I'm not doubting it. I'm just trying to figure out in my mind how it becomes unkillable at that point. Or even you've got 72 points plus whatever his other ship is worth.
I think it was Jake.
Presumably.
It was Jake, I think, with Outmaneuver and Lone Wolf. Maybe not Outmaneuver. I know he had Lone Wolf.
Well, it's not Outmaneuver and Lone Wolf. Oh, wait, it's...
And I assume that he's got a healthy bid. He's probably got a healthy bid because he wants that perfect information for
the dampeners.
For the stop or boost, yeah.
And that's the other thing, too. The repositioning as well. Oh, and then we haven't even talked about Luke Gunner, like...
Oh, yeah, but that's the... Dials don't matter. That's what that all... boils down to that.
Yep.
And it's a 360 turret, just like 1E.
Yeah. I think it's attrition. I think it's 100% attrition. Even with, you know, you just need that one more hull on Han. But at the same time, I don't know if any of those games are on YouTube. I haven't checked or on Twitch or anything, but I'd love to take a look at it, right? But I'm, you know, again, I had, as a Whisper player, you know this, Jeff, you know, I was seeing Han in my nightmares. Like, there was just nothing you could do barring Han, you know, rock himself for a turn.
That Han was capable of stopping 3 points of damage a turn.
Yep. Yep, that one was.
This one stops one, probably two, like 1.75. I definitely see Duncan's point. Don't get me wrong.
No, of course.
I just need to see it. I need to see it in play to see why it can't be killed.
Me too. That's the biggest thing, and I think that's something that every competitive player looks at, right, when they hear about the boogeyman or the new boogeyman, right. New kid on the block that's, you know, wrecking lists and things. You got to see it in order to, like, learn from it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Plus, we need to point out that for him to even proc the stop, he's going to take another damage, which normally is going to wear off when he does with R2.
He's taking a shield damage, which he's presumably doing when he's in order to avoid getting shot at.
Right.
And him not having shields is a prerequisite for him being able to trigger R2. So he has to lose the shield in order to regenerate a shield.
Right. So he can then can't turn around and use that shield to avoid a crit. So if your role, there has to be something's missing here. Like, I understand it, this guy has been playing this one list for years.
But Vince, he don't need a turnaround. Luke just shoots. It doesn't matter. That and the power from that list too. Han is just pointing away from the enemy ships, and he's fine.
That's boosting. It's large base boost, which wasn't on Duncan's list.
That's also true too, actually.
But the thing that you're missing again, Drew, is he's only triggering the free inertial dampeners when it stops him from taking shots.
Oh yeah, no, I know, I'm well aware of it.
I'm sorry, I was talking to Vince.
So
it's basically free inertial dampeners. Free that spending that shield makes no difference to him.
Right, right.
Yeah, I see it, guys. I do see the problem. I just wonder, this just seems to me the easiest thing to do is just fly more aggressive and cut him off.
Put it on the table. It's what we all did with 1.0 when Heaver won with a very similar list back in 2014. And like, you put it on the table and you won't want to fly anything else because you know, like, you see the power of, like, it's not, you know, for someone who loves to fly, it's very interesting, right? Because, like, you know, you have that nostalgic feel, right? It's the Han Solo from the movies, right? Like, they're getting the shields back. They're, you know, moving through the asteroid field, right? Like, they've got the solid, like, absolutely solid damage output. You've got the maneuverability. Like, it just feels fun to fly. But at the end of the day, when you look across the table at your opponent and what they had, you know, it's very akin to, you know, 40K game with a veteran and a newbie, right? You're literally just rolling dice. And your opponent is picking up models. And that's not, you know, that's fun for one person and not fun for the other.
I'm kind of with you, Vince. I want to be able to see it because I don't quite get it either. I'm kind of with you, like, look, just get more guns on Han Solo and you're going to get through his damage mitigation and he's going to die. But apparently that's much, much harder to do than we think it is.
Apparently, it has to be. I mean, it must be. Because better people than me are coming out and going, no, 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 you really aren't hearing us. That's not happening.
Yeah. that is a situation that we're used to being in. That was a situation when I first did Dengaru. I was one of the first people in the Bay Area just to play Dengaru one time at one tournament when I had heard about it, and I was like, guys, this is ridiculous. Posted it on Facebook. Everybody's like, no, it's fine. 2 weeks later, Dingaroo is the boogeyman. It's a position we're used to being in. It's very difficult to judge these weird interactions without, it's very difficult to mindcraft, to theorycraft them, because the play on the table is not the same thing.
Yeah, right. I wanted to throw that up there because I saw it today and I wanted to let you two tear it apart. So interesting, you know, Fat Han apparently is something that, does it need to be addressed, do you think? Is this a hot 100%, 100%. Fix? Is this July or is this a hot fix? Let's put it that way.
I think Drew, do you agree that the problem is
I definitely feel like, you know, again, with all of the tools in that list, you know, with all of the things that went down in cost, right, to allow this to become a list, I feel like it has too much of 1.0 in 2.0. But, you know, there's a whole other discussion entirely about the fact that like 2.0 is actually more of like a 1.5, right, version of X-Wing anyways. And that's something I don't want to get into, but I do feel like, you know, this was not the intention behind these cards, right? You know, when their powers combine, they create something
the Kanan interaction. The fact that inertial dampeners, trigger it after you've got perfect information, and not only do you arc dodge by virtue of just stopping dead, or you bank three or whatever, but you still get your action because of the Kanan interaction. I really think that's the linchpin, and I think that's what they've got to. That's the only thing they really need to fix.
Right.
Here's my question. Are we sure that wasn't seen before in playtesting?
That might be.
That's not exactly a deep cut.
It might have been.
You know what I mean?
Sorry. It might have been the reason. I'm sorry to cut you guys off. It might have been the reason why Luke was so expensive in the first place.
26 points.
I mean, he came out. He was what, like 3 points or something like that?
He was third. Yeah.
Yeah. So like. I mean, still 26, but it's perfect information, right? Now, I think the obviously the linchpin is Kanan, but the fact that Kanan also gives you a force, so now Han has multiple rerolls,
right? And to ways answer to modify your question, his dice, you were specifically asking if token, Kanan interaction was
I think
seen
that's a little too far
in playtesting, right?
Well, yes, that's what I'm asking. Let's say
so. I don't know. I would say that it is anybody's guess whether the Kanan interaction, because I remember people arguing about whether you could inertial dampeners with Kanan in 1E, and the same argument being had in 2E, and it came down with, it came down with the April answers in the FFG forums that it worked, right? So I don't know that it was seen in playtesting. I think that that answer came down in the forums, and boom, the list exploded.
Well, it, to be fair, it hasn't even exploded. I mean,
when I say exploded, I mean it exploded in the fetid, morassy swamp of list builders' minds.
Well, you know, so yes, I mean, it sounds like you two agree that there's a problem. And since I haven't seen it, I probably should stay out of this one. A moment of maturity on my part wouldn't hurt. Let's move on to.
Well, I haven't seen it either. I'm in the same boat. I really want to put it on the table or fly against it before I'm 100%. Because as much as respect as I have for really, really strong list builders and players, I am arrogant enough to want to see it myself because I can't quite grok the way it works without seeing it myself. I can't grok why you can't kill Han. It just doesn't. It doesn't work for me.
It breaks it breaks every rule right now that we know about it to 2.0. You know what I mean? Like a 17 hole, 5 offensive dice list should not be winning tournaments. You know what I mean? But even then, somebody's going to guess right. You know? Like, yes, you have perfect information.
With perfect information,
one time,
right.
Somebody's going to bracket you on the turn that you put in.
Yeah, the thing is, that's not how it works, though.
And they're going to put
with
three guns
on you. With the engine upgrade and the inertial dampeners, basically the player has 8 positions to choose from every round. And...
Like I said, you know, this is the reason why I don't want to do this, is because I'm going to miss a crucial step and just embarrass myself.
Right.
No, it's not. It's not embarrassing at all. It is incredibly hard to, it's hard to mind sim. It's just difficult to, I'm feeling exactly the way you are. I'm like, look, just put more guns on Han. You're going to be fine. And obviously the problem is getting guns on Han, but I need to see that. I need to see why that's such a problem.
Yeah. I really hope that, you know, that event is kind enough to put one of his games up. So we can all see, you know, everybody wants to see it. Like, if you see the face of evil, it becomes less terrifying. And you can see how it moves, and maybe you go, all right, maybe I got something.
Was he complaining about it, or was he warning about it? Because there's a difference.
Both. I mean, his exact, like I said, I quoted him exactly in our Facebook exchange, and I did everything I could to not, you know, embarrass the show. But...
Are you sure he wasn't turning from green skin to normal skin color, and he wasn't saying Thanos is coming?
Look, the guy said out straight up, I don't think this list can be beaten in 75 minutes.
But to me, that sounds like a warning and not like a complaint.
Right. That's I agree with that. I think he was saying, you know, he's trying to say, I can't beat this in 70 minutes. So if I can't, the vast majority of people have no chance, which is, I don't think that's within his right to say entirely.
Regardless, I still think that, you know, I mean, it's just a word of warning, right? You know, and we had this too, you know, at one point in X-Wing 1.0, it became when you sat down across the table from someone, you were like, hey, do you want to play against, you know, what I would be taking to a tournament? Or do you want to play against something that I build because I love this and I really want to play with it?
Yeah. Or it really was. It was, do you want to play against my tournament list, or do you want to have fun in this game?
Yeah, I hope that never becomes a thing again.
I don't think it will. I think again with a hot fix, you know, and FFG, we've seen it twice now. I'm confident that they will do what must be done.
I think FFG is going to leave this one, because if they haven't done anything about Phantoms yet, they're going to be hard pressed to justify one guy running wild in an event and then just nerfing his list immediately. You know what I mean?
No, it is sort of a matter of faith, because what I'm saying is, when I say I have faith in them, what I'm saying is that I still think they're going to fix Phantoms. I still think they're going to fix this. And I think they're going to do it before July.
Okay. Well, there you go, guys. Jeff siding with FFG. Let's talk about one more thing that we found out, over the weekend. Let's talk about Wave 5. And we're getting a couple of reprints, or I shouldn't say re-releases. Let's be nice. But we are getting 2 new ships, the Nantex-class droid fighter, and then the Republic is getting their version of the Y-Wing, the BTLB. What do we think of these? Are they as pretty as the Naboo? Just kidding, nothing is. And
everything is.
Oh, there's one thing that's more pretty than the Naboo Starfighter, and that is,
this is an incorrect statement.
I am most excited to get this giant ass box for the Punishing One. I don't even want the Punishing One. I just want the giant box it comes in.
By the way, weird fact. 2 weird facts. First weird fact, the Punishing One is listed as retail $30 instead of $40, which is weird. Might be a mistake, but That's weird. Second fact, if you spray painted my scrotum chrome, it would look better than a Naboo Starfighter.
Jeff, I'm gonna kick you from the chat. I don't understand. There are people who live on planets not of Earth, Jeff or Drew, and we just have to these people.
Do we pull a Stewie?
No, because you can't do anything about people with shit taste.
Chrome.
There's nothing wrong.
Shit balls, you mean?
Sir, are not American. Sorry. If you have a problem with Chrome, I demand your passport and birth certificate immediately.
When I replaced the pipes on my bike, I specifically went matte black over chrome. It's a truth.
I don't know how to even respond. You've driven me completely off my train of thought.
Oh, speaking of things going out of train of thought, can we talk about how freaking crazy the Nantex has an ability where they can rotate their they have a turret apparently, right? To their front and sides only, and they have to take a jam token. Sorry, not a jam token, a tractor token, in order to rotate their turret.
I believe that is what I read. Wow. However, it ties instantly into their special ability, the ensnare rule, which we were shown. Let me go ahead and find that. At the end of the activation phase, if you are tractored, you may choose one ship in your turret arc at range 0 to 1 and transfer one tractor token to it. So it looks like that this is their unique dice modification, really.
Right. I also think FFG is very unintentionally telling us that things that we already knew, right? The V19 torrent dial is terrible, and the ensnare picture of the torrent just like flying, you know, it basically looks like it's bouncing off of the, like a shield, right? Or like, I don't know. I look at that and I'm like, the torrent is already a bad ship on this artwork.
About the Zantex. Is it called the Zantex? Is that it?
Nantex with an N.
Nantex. Let me ask you guys something about it. So in order to rotate your turret, you assign yourself a tractor token.
Yes, sir.
Correct.
When you assign a ship a tractor token, the person who assigned the tractor token decides what boosts the ship or barrel of the ship.
Yes, sir.
So this ship can freaking just fly across.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Yeah, this thing is going to move and move quick.
Or it can move laterally. And
that
is zoom. Really weird.
Yeah, it's a cool addition. I mean, if you're looking for ships that aren't just going to be, oh, here's another gun platform, the Nantex is kind of what you're looking for. But that being said, it's also a pretty good gun platform. It's 3-die primary bullseye arc, and then its turret is a 2-die.
You don't think this is going to really mess with newer players a lot? Like,
oh, it's going to. I mean, I'll be honest with you. It's going to bring the tractor rules like to the forefront of gaming, right? As far as X-Wing is concerned. I do like the fact that in the damage deck, ionizing is like more of a thing, right? Like you can get the thing when you engage, take an ion token. And a lot of newer players were like, oh man, what is this? And, you know, us veterans were like, oh, it's a, you know, ion, you know, here's how it works. I think that the Nantex is going to bring tractoring to the forefront of the game. So people will understand like fully what it does. On top of that, I think it'll totally shift up the meta for pretty much everything that isn't a fat Han, right? Or Boba Fett, for instance. Like, being able to tractor ships is really going to shake things up.
It's also, I think, the really cool thing, this is the board control mechanic that that the Separatists need.
Yes.
Like, this is what you use to make sure that big first turn doesn't fall flat against some hot defense die. You know what I mean?
Right.
Like remember what you were talking about, Drew, with the last episode when you said that you kind of flew through the first salvo of energy shell charges. I mean, here's your answer to it.
Yep. Oh, and one other thing too. People are we were talking about this at the tournament because this article came out during our tournament. It was it's the last card in the upgrade spread. There's I'm pretty sure it says It looks like it says a computer, but I think that's actually the artwork above it. But it's I think it's old school targeting computer that gives you it looks like it gives you a target lock. Yeah.
Great, because that's really what the Empire needed.
It's what Sutirfeld needs.
No, he really doesn't. He like really doesn't at all. Sutirfeld's all really, really good.
Anyways, so I want to talk about the BTLB. Jeff, are you excited for the 1.0 Y-Wing dial to make it back into 2.0?
I mean, people talked about the worst dials in the world, and that dial had two green maneuvers on it. I just, that was such a terror. If you got stressed with that thing, you were basically just screwed. And now it's back.
But it's back for more.
That said, it is a beautiful model.
Yeah, it is. I like it a lot.
I'm interested in the fact that this is one of the few ships with an extremely good natural defensive mod.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. What is the ability on that, Vince?
The natural ability on all BTOBs. Hang on. I just went to Shadow Squadron Veteran.
Armored.
While you defend, if you are not critically damaged, you change a crit to a regular hit.
Played at home.
So basically, as long as you don't take a crit, you're never going to get critted.
Oof.
Yeah.
Does that effectively mean
you have to take two crits in one shot?
That looks like it. And I mean, if you run this with Luminara, you're not getting a crit through.
Mm. Yeah, that's true. Even with proton torpedoes, the variance on four dice getting two crits is a lot higher than, you know, just an average, like, two or three dice shot, right?
Yeah. I like that ability a lot.
I do, too.
It makes that this is going to be a tank.
It's going to be a lot more expensive than the Rebel Y-Wing, I think.
I think so, too.
I would say probably 3 or 4, maybe.
I think it's going to be more expensive because of, you know, you look at what they're paired with, right? Like, having two of these and two arcs and maybe Luminara in a list? Holy cow. That is so much hull to choose.
The two arcs alone is 90. If these are 40 points, there's no way you can fit Luminara.
Well, even so, having one or two of these and a single arc with a Jedi trailing behind, like, that is just so much to chew through.
And especially when you can't rely on the crit deck to save you.
Yep, you can't rely on the crits to get that extra damage and to take them down.
And they are 9 health, right?
They are what?
I'm sorry?
Are they 9 health?
8.
They are 8. They're 5 and 3. 5-3.
But it's 3 shield and 5 hull?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, so they're less hull than a Rebel Y-Wing, but more shields.
Gotcha. Okay.
So they are harder to, they are not significantly harder to kill, but more difficult to kill than a Rebel Y-Wing.
But again, the shield upgrade and that hull upgrade is the cheapest on them with the 1 agility.
Yeah.
They are going to pay 4 points for another shield.
Yeah, that's. I don't know if it's too good, but I'm starting to see, especially with the fact that they brought down the Rebel Y-Wings. The fact that, you know, these extra shield and hull upgrades to make them uneven, you know, hull and shields, like, I feel like it might, I'm worried that it may become a problem down the line, but, you know, I mean, we talked about the Y-Wings extensively, over the past couple of podcasts, but,
The interesting question is, can these double tap? And I don't believe they can.
It doesn't.
Because I don't see.
Yeah, it doesn't look like it come with a gunner at all.
I think that's, well, isn't that the 4? Isn't that specifically the BTL-4's thing?
It was back in old canon, yeah.
Yeah, so, you know, we may be seeing a little bit of fluff loyalty out of FFG here in that they make the Republic and the Rebel Y-Wings fill different roles. Like, one of them's not meant to be a gunfighter.
Yeah.
Right, one of them is an ace. Hopefully the pilot skill 6 is Anakin.
It's going to be for anyone. Very interesting to see what slots they give it.
Oh, wow. No, the initiative 6 is Anakin Skywalker. You can see it on the... Stop. Seriously? Yeah, I mean, in one in like one of the first episodes of Clone Wars, he flies one into battle. That's kind of cool. Well, because like you think about it, right? Like Anakin's ability works off of like removing stress, and I think it's interesting because his Y-wing way different than anyone else's Y-wing, right? Because like you can do those red maneuvers and possibly remove your stress. So is it good? I don't know, but I think it's cool and fluffy that they would do something.
It's one of those, is it good? I don't know. Am I going to try it? Probably.
Right. Yep. Exactly.
It's like, let's see how much of a combat Y-wing I can actually make here.
So moving on, we've got the Ghost expansion with a brand new 8-inch thick, you know, solid plastic. Whoa. My apologies. And it comes with the what's it called? The one thing that AP5. No, wait. The Sheathapede.
Yes, it's AP5. Is there any other pilots? We've never heard of them.
Right. Yep.
Like, does anyone else fly? No. Just Zeb. Some people run Zeb. They're strange.
So, speaking of what we were just talking about with Han, Fat Han, right? Like, this will bring Kanan into the fold of hyperspace, won't it?
Yeah, sure will.
Yeah.
Is Kanan one? I'm sorry.
Kanan is the linchpin of the Fat Han in extended,
right.
And this will presumably bring him into hyperspace.
Oh, I see what you're saying.
Yeah, because
dear.
His wife or girlfriend owns the Ghost. Oh,
okay, fair enough.
Speaking on that real quick, one thing that we were really excited about in talking at the tournament was the possibility of Chopper being a Republic astromech with a possibly different ability, because Chopper is a relic from the Clone Wars. Hera rebuilt him, and so we thought that would be super cool if that Y-wing expansion did come with a Republic chopper.
I think Chopper needs to be a double-sided card like Palpatine and the Emperor, Palpatine and the Chancellor. I think he needs to be Chopper was so clearly an enemy plant. So obviously an enemy plant.
I don't know. Chopper's been the most. Chopper was more effective at killing the Empire than anything else in history.
It's true. I mean, well, you think about everything, right? Like, we saw him kill other astromechs. We saw him belittle the little animals. We saw him, you know, deal with stormtroopers like they were, you know, cracker crumbs on the ground. Like,
he needs to be a double-sided card.
Plus, he's definitely suicidal.
Yep.
Like, Chopper is 100% suicidal.
So that's I like this, and the Ghost, I think it was a cool thing to have them come with the Sheathapede for all of those people that own the attack shuttle, and you know, because the attack shuttle came with the original Ghost. So
I think it's funny that they're promising that it fits in the model now, and everybody is going, yes, finally they're telling us it fits in the model. Well, you know, back in 1E they told us it fit in the model too.
Oh, that's right. They did. Wow. Oh my god.
Don't entirely believe it until you've seen it.
Until we see it on the table, man.
I think that's going to be the new tagline for the podcast. I don't believe it until I see it on the table.
You know what I really am sad about too is that it really doesn't look like the Inquisitor's TIE expansion has the opening and closing wings.
I got to be honest, man. The configuration drives me batshit. That wasn't how they dogfighted in the game, in the movies. They didn't constantly open and close S-foils in the movies. It just drives me crazy, and I don't want more of it.
Right, but they did it with the Scimitar, right? The Scimitar's wings open and close. And that does nothing. I mean, it just looks cool.
I mean, we don't know that they did that in combat.
No, we don't. We don't at all. I just, as someone who was told by a specific company that shall not be named that there were going to be moving parts on ships, I expected, you know, my Inquisitor's ties to have moving wings, and it looks like they don't. Although it is a new sculpt. I don't know if you guys have seen the photo from Celebration. It looks super cool. I was like, wow, it looks beefier and like way more detailed.
I've never been a fan of TIE fighters. I think they're hideous.
The last time I spoke with them, they thought you were pretty hideous yourself, my friend. I'm sorry.
Yeah, well, no, but there's, like I said before, there's no accounting for taste.
But as we also know, there's nothing more hideous than the Punishing One expansion pack. as Jeff silently chuckles to himself.
What are you talking about? I don't even know.
I missed the joke entirely.
And does it look like the peg is actually in the middle of the ship as opposed to being on the one side like it was in 1E?
I don't know. I was watching the stream of their announcement, right? And they're like hyping each ship, and then the Punishing One, they just slide it onto the screen, let it sit there for about, I don't know, a second and a half, and then move on to the next ship.
Oh my gosh. That is awesome. Wow, that was amazing. Well, I mean, who wouldn't? I mean, bro, you know, as someone who's new to the game, right? Like, guys, you got to pick up the Punishing One expansion. It comes with three of the four pilots that won the last, two of the three previous 1.0 Worlds events.
Right.
So you have to pick it up because it comes with all of those pilots.
Yep.
Cricket noises. Sorry.
No, that's fine. Well, I think we've squeed over, you know, the standouts of Wave 5, and plus we're definitely running up on our clock, as we
gotta
want to do.
We got to do the one last one, bro. The coolest new paint job on the block for the most garbage ship that no one is going to fly, the M3A Interceptor. Look at that, man. Like, the black and yellow that matches the new Z95 that just came out. I saw it, and I was like, I got to have
it. Don't say like, nobody's going to fly it, man.
I'm not going to fly it, but I want to own it. Vince, were you one of the people who looked at the Wave 5 release box expansions on your phone and had to kind of squint and were like, why are they re-releasing the Fang Fighter?
Yes. In a word, yes. I've looked at the Fang and the seat next to each other, and I just go, dude, I don't care.
Like, yep.
I'm just not, I've never really liked either one. As long as you're going to talk about paint jobs, guys, I have to say it. The Ghost looks better in this picture than the Seek. The Ghost is just pretty.
It's more vibrant, right? Like I like those yellows and the green teal or the blue teal, whatever you want to call it.
I'm just annoyed that it took them two tries to get a base that works. Because I'm not buying one of these, and I've got to live with my old Ghost that falls off its base all the time.
That annoys me. Oh, Jeff. Never change, buddy. Okay, so before we head on out, we are going to nerd out on the most important thing that was released in the last 3 months, the new trailer for Episode 9. Guys, here are the ground rules. You get 5 minutes. You're not allowed to say that Sheev laughing is the best part, and anyone who says that Rey rainbowing over the TIE silencer isn't awesome is kicked.
I can't say anything. No!
Well, that was easy. Jeff, what do you think?
I think that the people that are assuming that because we heard Palpatine laugh hollowly at the end of the trailer, that means that Palpatine is alive again. I mean, I don't know if these people have never seen a movie trailer before, or that doesn't necessarily mean Palpatine's alive again. In fact, with a trickster like J.J. Abrams, it almost indicates the opposite.
It'll just be a pile of rocks that looks like Palpatine.
Right. Yeah, I think that it was the ship was really, really cool looking. I think, like many people, I'm wondering why. Okay, if it's really trying to kill Rey, why isn't it shooting Rey?
I was just happy to see A-wings. Like, I'm just happy to see more ships in the series, because I was really upset with 8. I mean, we did get the the bomber and the RZ2, or at least the updated RZ2, albeit the RZ2 was in it for like, you know, just that first fight.
About three frames. Yeah.
Right. Like, so I'm excited about the new ships that we'll possibly be getting. I also love the badass, like, C-3PO, like, literally hanging on for dear life on that. It looked like the skiff from Return of the Jedi, with Poe and Finn on it, for that, again, like, few frame shot that we got. And Billy Dee Williams and his laugh. I think my favorite meme is young Lando being like, I'm going to get my ship back one day. And young Han is like, over my dead body. And then it's Billy Dee laughing in the cockpit. It's like, oh,
God.
That was so beautiful.
I still got sad feels out of that one.
Too soon?
It's a little too, yeah. It will always be too soon, goddammit. My two favorite parts of this trailer. Number one, like I said, Rey rainbowing over the TIE silencer is fucking awesome. If you can hate all you want, you're wrong.
And I think it's probably onto the TIE silencer, not over it.
Yeah, I was going to say it's equipped to it.
And I think it's probably a Special Forces interceptor and not a silencer.
Right.
You guys really just want to ruin my
fun. I'm sorry. There was one last thing, too, where it was like...
being nerds.
Kylo being like...
Fair enough.
Kylo being like, let the past die. Lol, just kidding. I'm going to put my mask back together. Like...
Exactly, yeah.
sorry, Vince, continue.
The other part that I really enjoyed is that, and you two will never be able to unsee this, so you're welcome, is Poe dressed like he's Brendan Fraser from The Mummy.
Oh my God, I noticed that. I noticed that, and I was like, yes, please, I want more.
Give me more, please. Yep. I'm
all in the height of Star Wars fashion is Brendan Fraser from The Mummy.
Oh,
it's actually of all fashion.
His character, I believe, actually in one of the behind the scenes for The Mummy and The Mummy Returns, they kind of mentioned like, yeah, he's got that sort of like Harrison Ford Han Solo look to him, and I mean, you won't be able to unsee it. You can't. It's a great look.
No, you know, Oscar Isaacs has been the highlight of the new trilogy. I don't think anyone really would push back against that, and hopefully they give him more than yelling and getting yelled at.
Yep.
Well, so
my ex-girlfriend keeps randomly texting me and telling me how good looking Oscar Isaacs is, which is, you know, I'm not sure exactly why, but I'm starting to dislike the dude.
Oh no.
I think you need to just accept his superiority and run with it, brother.
I mean,
I don't care about his superiority. I just don't want random texts telling me about his superiority.
Are you saying that you've never really enjoyed looking at a trigger happy flyboy?
I like Oscar Isaacs. I think he's pretty cool, but he's never really done it for me in a he'd be on my list if I were gay way.
Oh, he's like four on my list.
Is he? That's pretty cool. You know, Paul Rudd's on my list and he just turned 50.
Oh yeah. No, he's on my list too.
Yeah.
All right, number one on my list is still David Beckham, and that's not ever going to change.
Did we just turn this into like an Avengers like sports Endgame?
At this point, by the way, we need to get each other's lists and alt lists because that's the information to have a go.
Oh God, this is X-Wing. This is X-Wing After Hours now.
Yeah,
X-Wing After Hours, baby. Speaking of the Avengers, Chris Evans is number two on my list. I regret nothing.
Nope, it's true. It's true.
All right. Well, that is our 5 minutes on the trailer, guys. We are going to wrap this up. I am putting my foot down. Thank you, gentlemen, both so much for joining me.
It's after.
For Vincent, Jeff, and Drew, let's go ahead and head on out, boys.
It's after hours, so wouldn't it go up something? Okay, bye.
Have a good week, guys.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.